This is Talking Digital.
Greetings and welcome to episode 003 of the Talking Digital podcast. My name is Adam Cochran with TalkingDigital.org, and I just needed to make this podcast tonight. It's actually 1:42 in the morning on October 10th, 2009, as I record this. I couldn't go to bed until I finished or till I did this podcast. I apologize if I sound a little slow, but I believe that as you listen to this podcast, you'll see why. I'm kind of worked up about this particular issue. I didn't want to sit down and write a very long blog post. I wanted to do this as a podcast so that I could just kind of let my thoughts flow. Never know if that's a very good idea this early in the morning, but we're going to find out together. Hopefully it'll be interesting one way or the other. One of the things I do in my day-to-day life, I am a adjunct college professor. That means that I teach at a college. I teach one class at a college. The class I teach is web content development, and they pay me roughly $350 a month to teach the class. So in this web content development class, I have 30 students, and the project that I've put them together on, it's up to me to build the curriculum and all of that. The project that I've put together for them is for them to create blogs, and then from those blogs to create feeds, and from those feeds to also go into other social media sites, build ways of syndicating those feeds and, you know, posting up stuff. You know, when they post to their blog, I wanted it to relay to Twitter that they'd posted to their blog. When they put something up on Flickr, I wanted to make sure that it showed up in a certain part of their blog or in their Facebook page. And I'm having them draw this whole map because, you know, it seems like something that would be fairly simple to somebody who's savvy with social media. But the funny part is these are upper level students, which is great. They, you know, it's a 400 level class. Most of these people that are in the class need this class in order to graduate. The strange part is the first day of class, I asked them how many people had a Twitter account, how many people had a Facebook account. I did just a quick survey of how savvy they were with the social media. A response came back that they, most of them, a handful of them had Facebook pages. Lots of them were on MySpace. And two or three of them had Twitter accounts. But every one of them that who used a Twitter or had a Twitter account said that they had it, but they had never really used it. It was just there. They seemed to feel like social media was more of a waste of time, that it didn't have any real validity to it. And it seemed like that, you know, as I asked them more about it, it seemed to be something that was kind of the overall feeling of what they'd been taught, of the information that they'd gathered from their previous courses or professors or somewhere they were getting this information that social media, you know, had less validity to it. Whether or not that's true is something worth exploring, and that's part of what I wanted to talk about tonight. Don't want to slur my words there as I'm getting tired. Interesting thing that happened today is I was on campus. I just stopped in real quick. And while I was there, one of the advisors there for the program asked me to sit in on a meeting that the Society of Professional Journalists here was having. It was kind of a round table. And there was an editor from the Denver Post. There was an editor from the local Daily Sentinel here in Grand Junction, Colorado. And there were several students there who worked on the student paper for Mesa State College. And an editor for the Daily Sentinel and then the Society of Professional Journalists representative. I sat and I listened to him talk for a while about the struggles of newspaper. And that's what this meeting was mostly about, was newspapers. Listen to him talk about the struggles of advertising, of radio, of reporting, of finances, all these different things that we hear about from papers over and over and over. And you know, I'm familiar with that. I started out in newspaper. I love newspaper. And I thought I would be a newspaper guy because I started really thinking about my career back in 1996 as the internet was just starting to trickle out. And it, you know, it's just not the same thing. It was something totally different. Newspapers were going to be around forever as far as we were concerned. So I wanted to be a newspaper guy, and I have a love for newspapers. I worked for a newspaper for, well, a few newspapers and magazines for several years. So I know a little bit about where I'm coming from there, but I also am very, I love social media as well. I guess that's the best way to put it. I listen to several podcasts a week. I read tons of blogs. I have my iGoogle page set up so that I can gather news from all these different areas, lots of different tabs. So I keep a good survey of what's going on in the news at all times. And so, you know, that part right there, I'm very devoted to that. And I realize that there is a place for the newspapers and there's a place for the social media. And to me, they just all come together. It was interesting to listen to these newspaper reporters and newspaper representatives talk about the struggle of trying to keep the newspapers alive. And so I brought up a question. I kind of broke in and introduced myself, and I apologize for being late. But as I went in, I said, tell me something. I want to talk about social media and the new media, and I want to talk about whether or not you are afraid of it and you're trying to hold back on it, or whether you are trying to adopt it and manipulate it and use it. And the representative from the Denver Post was very honest, and he says, we're both afraid of it and we're trying to adopt it. But the other representatives that were there, really, one of the first things that was told to me, and this was from one of the people who runs the Daily Sentinel here in Grand Junction, Colorado, he brought up that I shouldn't try to compare social media and new media, that they're two different things. New media, he said, was more like cable news, and social media was more, you know, Facebook and Twitter. And he says those things aren't even together, that Facebook and Twitter were used more for making rants, posting rants. And he said they aren't even really news gathering sources, so that you can't even compare them. And I just thought that was baffling. I don't know if they really are. Do they realize what social media is, or do they just see this word social media, think of a bunch of people talking about what they're eating for lunch on Twitter, and just toss it out and think, oh, that's not a news gathering source. I just was thrown off by all that. So I didn't necessarily get defensive. I wanted to find out more what they believed. And so I talked about, you know, what is a news get? What is the purpose of the papers? And they talked about how, you know, the newspapers had a reputation that they gathered the news, that they brought, that they really researched stuff before they brought it to an audience. And when they had a reporter report on something, that they had done the work to make sure that that story was valid. The thing I thought was interesting is they didn't acknowledge the immediacy of social media. They didn't acknowledge that any news came from social media until I brought up stuff about the, for example, the plane crashes in the Hudson or earthquakes or things like that. And they seem to think, well, you know, that's a great place to go and to skim for, you know, a few details, but the real story is going to come out in the paper. The real story is going to be seen on TV. And that's what really got me thinking that, you know, today's social media and news media really can have a partnership. Or when I say news media, traditional media, print media, and even to some degree television news, they can have a relationship with the social media, and they already do. The problem is they're trying to fight that relationship. They're seeing it as, you know, Twitter, people on Twitter are reporting this. There are people on Twitter are posting these tweets about this plane crash or about this earthquake or about this other disaster that's going on. We better go and get that news. We better find out who these people are and get their stories. And that's great. Nobody who reads Twitter and sees the feeds in Twitter is going to get 100% of the story from Twitter. They're going to take that information. They're going to get that story going and be interested in it. And then they're going to go over to the newspapers and to the television. They're going to go everywhere they possibly can and get as much detail as they possibly can about what's happening. This is one area where I think sports reporting is actually way ahead of traditional news reporting. They, you know, when a story takes place in Washington, D.C., in the government, we have all these you know, reporters who are there getting this news and telling people about the politics of what's going on, and nobody is there with the reporter watching these things happen. It's that reporter's job to go and get that information. On the other hand, in sports, you know, you have a game full of 20 or, you know, 30,000 people, 10,000 people. You have a stadium full of people. Chances are, if you ask around, you're going to find somebody who either watched that game on television or was at the game to see it happen. When you talk to somebody who saw a game and saw the thing take place and you weren't there to see it yourself, hearing the highlights of the game as your friend relays them to you are not the same as actually seeing the game yourself. They're not even the same as getting the finite details, the things you really care about. Your friend can tell you how wonderful a play was, but they can't show you the highlight. They can't tell you about why that play took place and what the controversy was behind a play. And this is kind of the same relationship that news media has, or traditional media has, with social media. Social media is feeding us the immediate play-by-play of what's happening in the news. Not every little thing that happens in the news, and we'll talk about that in a second, but the real significant stuff is we're getting a play-by-play through Twitter and through Facebook and all these other social media sites, and it's whetting our appetite, and it's making us want to go in and say, well, what else is there to the story? How accurate is this information I'm getting? What is really happening in this plane crash? Where's the video to it? Where's the, you know, the details? Was anybody hurt? What are the current numbers involved with this event? And they're not going to turn to social media for that. They're going to turn to a news agency for that. The news agency may be an online news agency. It might be an online newspaper, an online blog, something like that, that they turn to. And this is where I see the disconnect with newspapers and, you know, social media. Social media doesn't see it as its job to report information. Social media just reports it. They just go out and say, well, I'm standing here and there's building is burning down. I'm at the airport and there's a plane on fire. I'm, you know, this is where I'm at and this is what's happening. They're not going to give you the details of the pilot. They're not going to give you the details of, you know, what caused the disaster to happen. They're just going to tell you this is what's happening. They're the play-by-play people. The newspaper and magazines and everybody else are there to get the whole story. Anyone who really cares about the news, which are the same people who read newspapers, those are the people who are going to go and try to find the whole story, and they're still going to depend on newspapers for that. Now, the problem is, people aren't necessarily turning to paper. They're turning to online. They may go onto the internet and read it in their browser. This is where newspapers are really having a struggle, because they still want you to buy the newspaper. They still want you to see it because there's display ads there in the newspaper, and that's what this is all about. We need to get people reading the newspaper so that they can see our ads so that we can make more money. We also need to be able to prove that those ads are working. And online ads, according to them, weren't working as well as the print media ads. And we'll talk about that if we get a chance here, but that was really it. They just felt like they had to bring people back to paper. That's just, they didn't say it out loud, but that's just the feeling you got, that they didn't see social media as having any validity, that, you know, their paper was struggling and it was all our fault as readers for not reading their paper. They talked about how occasionally a blog may break news, may put some information out there. They talked about how it can influence public opinion, and sometimes the newspaper has to come out and say, you know, they realize that all of a sudden they're behind on a story because the blogosphere, you know, a story erupts overnight. Everybody gets concerned about it, and, you know, if a newspaper holds back because they think that story is just a trending topic that is going to fade away, and then it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the newspaper comes out and talks about it and addresses it, you know, even a couple days later, and it seems like they're behind because everything that really needed to be reported has been reported, but it's been reported with the slant that the social media and new media puts on it as it filters through the blogs and opinion sites and things like that. So that I understood their point there, but at the same time, you still can't bring people back if they're not reading your paper and not getting your information. And if you haven't gone out there to prove to them that you have something to tell them, that your work is worthwhile, people just aren't going to do it. People aren't going to read it, and they're not going to find your story. So you need to do something to get in people's faces, to get them to see your stuff, and to keep them relying on you for information. The future of newspapers is always an interesting topic, and that's, you know, didn't come up a lot, but at the same time, it really made me think that, you know, they're spending so much time trying to talk about the same things everybody else is talking about. All newspapers and magazines and everybody are, they're doing this, but when you get a bunch of local papers together, and I'm going to call the Denver Post a local paper, even though it has a very broad readership, it still is it's a geographic paper, I guess you could say. It has a, you know, a certain market to it. Even with that, you still spend so much time on national news reading AP stories that you can read almost anywhere at any other paper you go to. I think that the trend for newspapers to survive has to be for them to either cover smaller beats, and smaller niche things, cover what's happening in the individual schools, not just the news of the school district. Talk to the students and the teachers and administration in individual schools. And that means a lot of work for the reporter. The reporter has to go to each individual school, talk to students and do a lot of work there. The same thing goes with businesses, to talk about certain sectors of town and go to each business and say, what's happening in your business? What are people doing? What are the trends? Because that's the one thing that nobody will find on the internet. Google can have, local Google, but they cannot bring you that local news unless that local news is covered by somebody else. You're not going to find it on Facebook and Twitter and things like that, because nobody's writing a full entire story on what's happening with the lunch program at a given school or an administration or something like that. And these stories are not sexy. The stories aren't interesting, but at the same time, it's going to build a loyal following, because people will know that if something happens in that town, the only way they're going to know about it is if they're turning to your media, to your news source. They're not going to find it on Google. There's no way. They know it's not going to be found on CNN.com or something like that. It's Politico. It's not going to happen. Local government stories are another good example of that. Things that really matter to a community, and that community may get smaller and smaller and smaller as newspapers become more and more valid, because they'll have to focus on their small communities rather than trying to cover the national stories. A great example of this, to me, one of my biggest pet peeves is television weather. I can't stand television weather. I don't know why it's there, and I don't understand it. I know that there's probably a certain demographic out there that waits until 10:30 or 11 or whatever time you have the news. They wait for that time at night so that they can watch their 10 minutes of the weather forecast on the local news. But I think of all the other things that could be happening there. I think about how, there may be some service organization or a local school or something that did something that's fairly insignificant when we look at the whole community. But when we think about it as a news story, it's these little tiny, what might be considered, feature stories or, little lifestyle stories or something like that. These little tiny things that may seem insignificant to a larger community, when those all add up, when you're covered in the paper, when your interests are covered in the paper or acknowledged by a media source or a news source, that brings up your trust in that news source. For example, just this last week, my son's school had a Donuts for Dad's Day. Now, I know this seems like a silly thing. Nobody cares about Donuts for Dad's Day. However, if the news media had covered Donuts for Dad's Day, I can tell you that there's a few people who would have bought the paper that day that wouldn't have bought the paper otherwise. You take that story, multiply it times 50, and you may get more readership on that day of people who actually open the paper and see those ads than people who see advertisements just because they get the paper every single day and they thumb through it. They're going to look for their story and they're going to look for the information that's important to them. You do that day after day after day after day, and you will have a newspaper that people keep coming to and keep reading because they want to know whether something they care about was covered that day. They're not going to go in it and see what, your newspaper's point of view was on Barack Obama winning a Nobel Peace Prize. They're not going to open the paper and, you know, see what Ann Landers has to say, you know, when they can go to the internet and get that stuff. They cannot go to the internet and get the small stories, the micro stories, macro stories, either one, that can't be covered on the internet, that can't be found online. And that's where newspapers will succeed. That's how they began. And that's where they need to go if they want to continue to succeed. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to people because they think of, you know, they see the internet being so vast and spread out so far, and they see, you know, their small community, and they just think, how can we even make a dent in that when we have so much going on in the internet? You know, how can we even compete? And that is the only way to compete. That's the only way they can survive, is to focus on smaller and smaller details in the community and really create a real community paper. Do it seriously, do it with a great approach, do it professionally, and you will build up trust in your community. And that's what I see as being the future newspaper. As far as advertising goes, I do want to mention that quickly. Advertising is a whole different thing. They talked a lot about advertising today at this roundtable, and I'm not an advertising guy. I'm not a marketing guy, but this is just my observations from an idiot that was sitting there in the room. They mentioned how much less profitable online advertising was for their paper. And one of the reasons that they talked about that was because they had a hard time convincing the client that online advertising was, was effective. And you know what? I believe that with all their hearts, they believed that online advertising was less effective than display ads in their newspaper. I know that's what they believe. That's just what they didn't come right out and say it. But everything that they said led me to believe that there was no potential for online ads, that they were a waste of money and a waste of time because they didn't bring the same results. What I wanted to know, or what I want to know, is how do you measure that? How do you know? When you ask somebody and they come in your store and you say, how did you hear about us? And they say, I saw your ad in the paper. That's very easy to measure. That's something that you can go to a person and say, you know, this many people came into my store and said they saw the ad. However, you go into that same store and you say, how did you hear about us? And a larger group of people may say, I heard about it from a friend. Where are those friends? Was it somebody who they play soccer with, or a soccer mom, you know, fellow soccer mom that they talked to? Or did they see it on Facebook? If they saw it on Facebook, how did they see it on Facebook? Was it that their friend said, oh, you've got to try this new hamburger place? Or was it that their friend on Facebook said, I'm a fan of this hamburger place, and that was enough to do it? Was it just that you knew the name because you'd seen it in a Twitter stream and one of your friends had that name in their Twitter stream? You just don't know. You can't sit and measure that because people don't tell you, this is where I've got it. Now, it is totally measurable. There's a million different ways to measure it. The internet is the most measurable way of advertising if you utilize all of the tools. You can know the demographics of who's coming to your site. You can know what kind of, you know, where part of town they're shopping from, or what part of the, you know, at least what part of your region they're shopping from. You can know whether they bought something right away from that place. You can know whether they clicked on an ad and then went on to buy something. You can measure all of those things that you can't measure from regular display ads. You go into a store and you say, you know, how many people came in because they saw the ad? Well, I had 25 people say they came in because they saw the ad. How many of those people bought something? That a lot of times isn't measured. It's a measured immediate. It can be measured immediately on the internet. Simply, it's very easy to do. The other thing you can do is you can build affiliates. You can't build affiliates the same way in the real world as you can in the internet. You can't make it so every person who tells people about your book gets 10 cents or 50% off or whatever of the next thing they buy in the store. You can do that with the internet. The problem is people aren't doing it. These advertisers don't understand how to advertise on the internet, and newspapers don't want to hassle with it because they don't understand it either. And we run into this problem where, because the ads are so hard to sell and so hard to understand, that the sales aren't taking place. if they understood, if there was a shift in the way they think and they really put in the effort, they would realize that an online ad has far more value than a display ad. It is hard to break that thinking both with the client and with the paper, but a little bit of research on the paper's part would teach them how effective those online ads could be. They could lead their clients and they could show their clients how that works. And eventually, I think we'll see a major shift in the value of ads. I think that we'll see online advertising get the recognition that it deserves as a valuable way of advertising. The people who see that already are out there doing it. They're making it work, but they're not, you know, they're doing it for themselves. They're not going out there and saying, let me show you how your newspaper can make money with my skills. They're going out there and just using their skills and making the money for themselves. So the newspapers have to do a little bit of research in that and learn how to do that. And that is going to take a lot of investment of time and money and resources to do it. But once they do, they'll get all of that back. Those are just a few thoughts that I've had about it. I know I've got a lot more than that I could go off on, but this has already been 25 minutes, which is longer than it should have been. This is Talking Digital. I'm Adam Cochran, and I do want to invite you, if you're in the Grand Junction area, we're having our Windows 7 house party on October 27th. If you head on over to talkingdigital.org and you want to get an invite to that, we'll be glad to send one out to you. Just go to talkingdigital.org and click on the link for the Windows 7 house party. Fill out that form and we will make sure to send you an invite. Also, I've posted a video just tonight. I posted a video on YouTube and on Talking Digital of my Windows 7 party unboxing. Now, I'm taking this Windows 7 party thing extremely seriously, and you'll see that on the video. We're having a Windows 7 house party. And I did a very masterful job on a great video unboxing all the party favors that Microsoft sent me, Steve Ballmer sent me. And I hope that you enjoy that video. Head on over to talkingdigital.org. Thank you very much for joining me. I apologize for the length of this podcast. If this irritated you a little bit, if I talked about something that annoyed you or I was way off base on something, head on over to talkingdigital.org. Leave a comment for me. Tell me what you think or where I was wrong. I'm always happy to correct myself because these are just my opinions and the way I see things. But I really want to learn more about this stuff. And if you can tell me more, that is fantastic. I never mind being set straight on something that I get wrong because that just makes me better at arguing the point later on when I need to do it again. So thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate you hanging around. This is Adam Cochran with TalkingDigital.org. So long, everybody. See you again soon.
This is Talking Digital.